From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week's guest on Naps Chat is Naps Executive Vice President Chuck Mulador. We will be talking about the upcoming Naps Legislative Conference and Lobbying Days conducted in our nation's capital and how the conference may be colored by the upcoming 2026 congressional election. Now, let's explore some postal-related current events with Chuck Mulador. Chuck, on December 24th, Christmas Eve, the Postal Service gifted the mailing public a new regulation that clarified postmarks no longer represented the date on which mail was deposited in a mail collection box, post office, or picked up by a letter carrier. Rather, the postmark will now reflect the date on which the letter was processed, which could be days after the letter entered the mail stream. How will this postmark change impact America's understanding of postal reliability and speed, as well as in companies and government authorities that rely on postmarks to set deadlines?
Well, Bob, first of all, thanks for having me on Naps Chat. Always a pleasure to be here. Okay, on far as the issue on the postmarks, you know, really, it's kind of just putting out in the public domain what we've known for a while now. Because with the advent of RTO, regional transportation optimization, and in many cases across the country, mail staying in postal facilities overnight or over a weekend, this has been something that has been going on for a while. So we know that the Postal Service measures service now not on the day it's dropped off at a post office, but on the day a letter hits an automated piece of equipment. So day one could be 1, 2, 3 days after a person actually mailed a letter at a post office. So in a way, this does bring some transparency to what has been going on for some time now. It also can explain a little bit of why service has been declining in some parts of the country. It's something that's very noticeable to members of Congress that we hear from representatives and senators from their constituents that tell them, you know, I mail a letter this day, it takes a week, or used to take a day or two. And a lot of that is because of the way that regional transportation optimization has been rolled out. So I think it definitely has an impact on people. They need to be aware of the fact it's tax time. It's going to be ballot time this fall. So people have to be aware of the fact that the postmark that they might rely upon to return their ballot or to send in their taxes might not actually be put on an envelope for a day or two or three after they mail it at a post office. So that, take that into account. I'm glad the post office just basically released the information that's been an ongoing process now for months.
If a person wants a postmark on the date it is delivered, at least to a post office, they can ask for a hand postmark. They will do that at no charge.
They should. It would be, I think, something that a person who absolutely had to have a postmark on a certain day should absolutely do to ensure that the validity of that piece of mail arriving at the post office on that particular day.
Last week, the Senate returned to President Trump the nomination of Anthony Lomagino to be governor of the United States Postal Service. The president's other nominee, John Laval, withdrew his name from consideration 45 days after he was nominated. You know, Chuck, that leaves us with only 4 presidentially nominated Senate-confirmed governors. What impact, if any, do 5 vacancies have on postal governance?
Well, first of all, it doesn't give them a quorum, right? They're the decision-making body, the governance body of the U.S. Postal Service. So if your governing body doesn't have a quorum to make decisions, it's going to impact a lot of issues within the Postal Service. So who's going to make these decisions? Will they be made unilaterally by the Postmaster General? You know, we just don't know. It's something that needs to be addressed, but I just hope that the president doesn't nominate people for these positions shortly and soon, that reasonably care about the Postal Service, that we're not trying to starve the Postal Service by eliminating the Board of Governors or reducing it through attrition to the point where there is no governing board of the Postal Service, which would be very bad. So we want to encourage the administration to find people to be Board of Governors that will have considered thoughts, that will be advocates for the Postal Service. But I think we'll have to wait and see how that process plays itself out. But it's definitely a concern, without a doubt.
Now, there was a time not long ago where there were no Board of Governors, and basically
yes.
they created this committee of postal employees, or the Postmaster General, Deputy
right.
Postmaster General, who basically ran the organization
yeah.
without a Board of Governors.
Right, which is not a good thing. The governors are the overseeing body of the Postal Service. They make important decisions about the Postal Service, set the direction, the course for the Postal Service. To have that done unilaterally without any, say, board of directors, kind of what the Board of Governors are, right? The board of directors of a corporation. To have that done unilaterally is not in the best interest of the Postal Service or the American public.
Now let's talk about the upcoming legislative conference or legislative training seminar. Could you share the dates and how to register for the conference?
Okay, well, it's March 15th through the 18th this year, 2026, at our usual spot here in Arlington, Virginia. And the registration is open right now. So it's early this year. We've often been, I know last year we were in early part of April. So people are going to have to get their registration done here very soon. Registration will increase on February 20th, and we want to make sure people don't have to pay an additional fee to come to LTS because they just didn't or weren't sure when the actual dates for the registration are. So you can go online, naps.org. Very simple to do the registration. Hasn't changed any from the past few years. Been very successful doing it that way. So I would encourage people to get registered now. Get your hotel rooms. The room block is open. People can make their arrangements also online through the website. So it's all very convenient for people to register as well as get their rooms at the Crystal City Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. So I would encourage people to do that as soon as possible.
What we will be talking about this year is the condition of the United States Postal Service. Right before the new year, the Postal Service submitted its fiscal year 2025 annual report to Congress. Reports stated that the total revenue for the Postal Service increased by 1.1%, but mail and package volume decreased by 3.3%. At the same time, delivery points rose 1.1%. Clearly, this is a challenging scenario. How should NAPS members, when they come to D.C., wrap their arms? How are we wrapping our arms around this data?
Well, it all rolls together because the fact that delivery points continue to increase in our country, revenue increasing very slightly. But we made a bet, we being the Postal Service, that package volume would be what could carry the Postal Service forward through especially DFA, Delivering for America. What we've seen is that package volumes have slightly declined. So it's this almost a vortex or a tornado of events where your delivery points increase, your volume decreases, and then you have these continued losses, $9 billion last year, $9.5 billion the year before, projecting $8 billion this year. You can't sustain those types of financial losses year over year over year without some type of plan to address those and some type of plan to turn the ship around and get us out of this perfect storm that's going on right now. So it's very concerning. Obviously, you can't stop the growth of delivery points, right? People are going to build homes and move and things like that. And we've got to find ways to increase revenue. I know the PMG, to his credit, has said we can't cut our way out to prosperity. We have to grow revenue. And he's got some plans to do that, which is also a good thing. But it leads us into what we can do here when we arrive at LTS in March and head to the Hill. We have to help them understand the financial condition that the Postal Service is in, that it's in some of these financial conditions because of the lack of significant growth in the parcel business, but the continued increase in growth in delivery points. So there's a place where we have to make Congress understand why the Postal Service is in the shape it's in and some of the things that they can potentially do to help the Postal Service survive and thrive into the future.
Postmaster General David Steiner and Chairwoman of the Board of Governors, Amber McReynolds, summarized several congressional asks in the report they made to Congress. They specifically asked for a more equitable approach in pension cost allocation and an increase in the agency's credit limit beyond its current $15 billion cap. They also requested streamlining unspecified redundant oversight mechanisms. How do these congressional requests by the Postal Service align with what NAPS's 2026 legislative agenda will be?
Well, we support this idea of an equitable approach to pension cost allocation. This goes back to prior to the existence of the U.S. Postal Service, back when it was an entity of the federal government. These pension costs should be returned back to the Postal Service. In fact, in the Biden administration, a study indicated that they should go back to the Postal Service. However, the president at that time felt it should be done through legislation. So there is a legislative effort to do that. Whether or not that can gain the steam and the support of Congress is a whole nother ballgame. But we support that. We definitely should be supporting that. The oversight, I have concerns with that. And we'll have Robert Taub, who's the chairperson of the PRC at LTS this year. And I think that's dangerous, as we talked about just a minute ago, with having not a quorum on the Board of Governors. I think it's dangerous to not have good oversight of the Postal Service by the PRC and other entities. So I don't think the answer is in reducing oversight. That's an easy answer to say, well, I don't want to be responsible and held accountable for what I'm doing, but that's not how we should do it. The $15 billion cap, increasing the cap borrowing authority from $15 billion to $30 billion, to me, is probably necessary, but it's problematic because I think you would agree with me just in conversations we've had on the Hill, that's just not going to be a giveaway. Like, okay, here, we'll give you another $15 billion of borrowing authority. They're going to want something in return for that, some type of commitment to do certain things, and you have to be cognizant of what those types of things could be. So there will be trade-offs, I think, for that if it happens. I don't know the current environment that there's any mood in Congress to increase that borrowing authority, but I'm very confident that if there is interest in changing and increasing that borrowing authority, it's going to come with significant strings attached, and that's a concern.
In terms of the pension allocation and investment of pension amounts, and actually the trust fund, the Retiree Health Benefits Trust Fund, we have a resolution that was passed at our last NAPS convention, which supports the Postal Service efforts to have more flexibility in the investment of the Retirement Health Trust Fund, which will help the Postal Service.
Absolutely, because right now they invest in a G fund type of investment, which pays, as you know, if you're in TSP, very minimal a return, right? And there are periods of time, particularly we're in one right now, actually for the last several years, of significant growth in the stock market. So the Postal Service would want to invest in those vehicles, stock market and so forth, and it would have been a significant return above what they've been getting recently in these very conservative government type funds. So they should have the flexibility to do that. I think you can build some constraints into that to keep them from just strictly investing in stock markets. And then we have a stock market crash and the post office suffers huge financial loss. I think there's things you can do to build into that some security for the investments of the Postal Service. But to make them only invest in these very low yield bonds and these low rates of return, I think is definitely a punishment to the post office.
The issues that we're going to be talking about with Congress, some of the issues are going to be the same as we spoke about in past years. Could you review those issues?
Three things we've carried over from last year, okay? H.R. 2095, which is the Postal Police Bill. And we got very close with that last year. We really did. We were very close, in my opinion, to getting a vote in the Senate, which would have been excellent for us, but it didn't happen, but we got to keep pushing. So H.R. 2095 would return the postal police to the status they had before several years ago when they were actually doing their work on the street protecting postal employees. H.R. 1560 would fix the pay consultation process, which we just went through with the post office. It's not a fair process because there's no skin in the game from the Postal Service, right? At the end of the day, they can just implement a pay decision, even though we offer them, as we did in our last pay consultation process, when we just most recently concluded with them, multiple options to improve service, pay, morale, these types of things that largely go unaccepted by the post office. So it would fix that process by putting in a mediation process with teeth. That would be almost like a binding mediation type of process where a mediator, if there was no agreement, would issue a decision. And we think that's a good thing. 1559 would give MSPB rights. We've been talking about this for years. MSPB rights to those postal employees that no longer have them, headquarters employees and so forth, that don't supervise two or more craft employees. And a big one, of course, is H-Res, House Resolution 70, against the issue of privatization of the Postal Service. Now, there's other issues out there. You know, we could talk all day about some of the other issues that we have, legislation we support. But this privatization issue, to me, my view is we had the rally last year right outside the U.S. Capitol, and it got noticed by members of Congress. We had members of Congress at the rally. And in my opinion, it stamped out that privatization fire that was burning. It was the conclusion of a string of rallies held by APW and ELC and other groups that we supported, and they supported our efforts as well. So that united front kind of stamped that privatization issue out, but it's always there. There are people that continue to talk about privatization, and we have to continue to push back against efforts to privatize the post office.
I'm going to come back to the two bills we spoke about a couple of minutes ago, H.R. 1560, which is the legislation to remedy the flawed consultation process. And that's a bill that was originally introduced at our request by former Congressman Jerry Connolly, who passed away. That legislation has now been taken up by his successor, Congressman Walkinshaw, who represents Fairfax County. And H.R. 1559, the Merit Systems Protection Board appeal rights bill, and I was just doing some research on that, that dates back to 2013, that former Senator David Pryor from Arkansas introduced at our request back in 2013.
Yeah.
And these are very important issues that affect so many of our managers and so many of our EAS-level postal employees. So even though they've been out there for a number of years, we can't take our foot off the gas on it.
No, and these are not short-term issues. So look at postal reform. It took us 16 years to get a postal reform bill to fix the last postal reform bill in 2006, 2022. Look at the WEP GPO. It took 40 years to fix that, which benefited a great number of postal retirees and other groups. So these are not issues. I know sometimes I hear from people, well, we've been supporting that for a couple of years now, and we may have to support that for many more years to come. But there sometimes an idea time finally comes, and we continue to fight these battles for these issues. We'll continue to fight them until we win. And that might be this year, next year, or the year after, or even later than that. But we don't stop fighting for them because we don't get what we want in one or two or three cycles, in one or two or three years, or Congresses. So we keep pushing for it. These are long-term battles. It's a long game. We play the long game here. And that's what we're going to continue to do with this with our legislative agenda.
Talk about long games. Around a year ago, we were talking about enactment of the repeal of the windfall elimination provision in the government pension offset. That took around 40 years to get enacted from the point at which we started talking about the issue to the point of enactment. Now, hopefully we won't have to wait that long to resolve the issues that we're concerned about, but you know, sometimes perseverance works.
That's right. Again, it's a long game. We have to be in it for the long game. We can't get discouraged. We keep pushing it, and we'll continue to push it. And we're going to win. But again, it's a long process. It's a long game, and we're playing the long game here.
This year's legislative conference will be coinciding with the beginning of the 2026 election season, starting with primaries and special elections for House vacancies. In fact, the primary season starts in Arkansas, North Carolina, and Texas on March 3rd, which is immediately before our conference. How will the election year influence how NAPS approaches our legislative conference and our lobbying efforts, not only at the conference, but throughout the rest of the year?
Yeah, so LTS, being early this year in March, will be our kickoff, right? So we're going to give everyone our marching orders, or their marching orders, to go to the Hill while they're here, but to take that message back home. And I know that right now, you know, we are actively engaged in talking to candidates. We have a lot of retirements this year in the House and Senate. So we're actively engaged in finding people and wanting to help people that will help us. So it's an effort that is ongoing. We've got to elect Congress people, House and Senators, that feel the same way we do about our issues, about the Postal Service, about NAPS. And we have to continue to reach out and make friends in new places and new friends. That's not what we're actively doing. So this is what the 2026 midterm cycle is going to be all about. We've got a few people from the last cycle that did not live up to what I think they should have lived up to, and we're going to try to replace those individuals. We've got some folks who are retiring, and we're going to have to find people to replace them that align with the same principles that we do. So it's an ongoing effort, but we need the help of everybody out there to not just come here to the Hill on one or two days a year and say, well, hey, I did my part. No, we want you to come here and do that and then go home and start talking to these folks, because the engagement at the local level means so much more than it means up here. So we're going to be actively pushing for candidates that we think share our values and ideas, actively working against those that do not. And we'll see where we go. And again, we don't play the blue-red game, okay? We have made great inroads with Republican members of Congress, and it's paid benefits to us. I'll just talk about, quickly, Congressman Mike Turner, Republican from Dayton, who was very instrumental in beating back quite a few very negative to EAS employees issues in H.R. 1, the so-called Big and Beautiful Bill. Congressman Turner is a friend of ours. He's a supporter of ours, and we'll continue to support him. So we look at either side of the aisle, and where we find folks that will support us and will help us, we'll support them and help them. It's interesting to me, and I know I'm sure it is to you too, Bob, that we have people actively seeking out our help now that we never heard from before, because they see the presence we have on the Hill. They see the efforts that you continually make up on the Hill, and they want to be a part of that. They know who we are now. They know what we stand for, and they know that we're not in the political game. We're in the game to help the post office, and we're in the game to help postal supervisors, managers, and postmasters that we represent.
Now, the theme of this year's conference is our voice is our power.
Yeah.
And we wanted that voice to be amplified this year.
Yeah.
So as our NAPS delegates come to our legislative conference, what should they expect? And is there anything new this year?
Well, I think they should expect a renewed focus on our role in the legislative process. So I would say that we have now become a very large voice, outsized voice. You know, we're not a big pack. We're not a big political action committee. But we make up for, in hard work, what we lack somewhat in resources, right? So we need people to work hard and to make a difference. So when they come here this year, in a few months, 2 months, to Arlington, Virginia, to attend LTS and head to the Hill for the 2 days after that, and then go home and continue to advocate, the message is going to be one of strength and strong voice. Yeah, I think we learned last year at the rally that we had on the Hill that we do have a strong and loud voice. And when we shout that voice, we're heard. So we have to recognize now that we are an outsized voice on the Hill. People will listen to what we have to say, and we can influence the process. And that's what we have to make people understand now, that this is a serious process. We want them to come here, enjoy Washington, D.C. I'm hoping for a beautiful, sunny couple of days while they're here. But I want them to go home with the knowledge that what they say and do matters back home with the congressmen and senators they're going to be talking to. So I think that's going to be the stronger emphasis now that we may have a small bank account, so to speak, but we have a very, very large and outsized voice, and what we say matters.
And I want to echo that and just go into a little bit of detail about that. At our rally last year, when we asked the two largest unions, the APW and the NALC, to participate, they jumped at the opportunity.
Yeah.
Moreover, we had the American Federation of Government Employees, which isn't even a postal union,
right.
join us also. So there's a tremendous amount of respect that NAPS is being, you know, NAPS has with other organizations that lobby and are active in the political and government representation realm.
Yeah, and we had NAPS members going to rallies being held by unions, right? Our president, Ivan Butz, went to an NALC rally here in Washington, D.C. Jimmy had, our Secretary of Treasury, Jimmy has attended union rallies on behalf of anti-privatization. I went to one in New York by the APWU. And we had, as you said, we had union leadership here when we did our rally. So there are things we can work on, not only in the broader Fed postal community, but in the postal community, unions, management organizations. When we put our collective heads together around legislation and so forth, we can make a difference. And we've seen that, and I've seen it, and we can continue to do that. And when we do that, we'll make a difference and we'll make things better for the post office and for NAPS members.
Last question, Chuck. Mm-hmm. We're going to have this conference. People are going to go home. What should they do after they go home? What should NAPS members do who are not able to attend the conference?
Right. And that's understandable. So we have a legislative webpage that is continually updated with information. The bills that we support, they can find out who their congressperson is. They can send messages to their congressmen and senators through the NAPS website. Make it very simple. They can type up a message. You know, they work for the Postal Service or they retire from the Postal Service. I need you to support this bill or that bill or be involved in this or that. But most importantly, they need to find out who is their congressman, who is their senator, and go see them. Go talk to them. And if they want to attend an event back home, let us know. We'll pay the freight to get you into that event and have that few minutes of conversation with that congressperson or senator to let them know who you are and who you represent. We have to be boots on the ground, as our president, Ivan, is so proud to talk about having boots on the ground, and it's so true. We make a difference with boots on the ground by knocking on those congresspeople's doors, going to their meetings, being actively engaged with them so they know who we are and what we stand for. That's how we make change happen. That's how we get things done. And we all have to be in on it. It's all hands on deck. If nobody has learned anything over the past decade, if you've learned nothing over the past decade, you should have learned that your vote matters. It matters who you vote for and who becomes your representative, your senator, your president. It all matters. So people have to get involved. They have to be willing to make the sacrifices to get involved and make a change and make a difference.
With that, I want to thank our NAPS Executive Vice President, Chuck Mulliter, for joining us on NAPS Chat today.
Thank you, Bob.
And I want to thank you for listening in. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, share the link with your friends and colleagues. Please be safe, be healthy, and we'll see you next time.
And make